We're the Good Neighbor Network, FM 101.9 and AM 1450 Murfreesboro, FM 100.5 Smyrna, audio and video streaming at WGNSradio.com. This is the WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you. Now, your host, Bart Walker.
Well, good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. This is your show. And if you have questions dealing with the city of Murfreesboro, that's our focus this morning. We invite you to fax them to us. Actually, text them to us. Don't fax them. Text them to us or call. And you do both of those at the same number, 615-893-1450. That's right, 615-893-1450. Assistant City Manager Sam Huddleston is with us this morning. Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning, Bart. I think your comment about faxing just demonstrates that you and I both have spanned several eras of technology upgrades.
That's right. Now, I should have really told, and you can use your carrier pigeons and things of that sort,
that's right,
too. Sam is usually helping out on the program. You don't see him, but when the mayor is on, the mayor's getting information on his cell phone, texted information, and you're sending it to him. You just are a fount of information.
Well, you know, when you're involved in city government every day and you follow the projects and you follow the issues, and our mayor and council are part-time elected officials, and so they do rely a lot on our senior staff and senior leadership for handy information, and they all do a good job in staying abreast of big picture items, but sometimes some of the details that come in from your listeners on the program, we're just able to come along, staff, we monitor those and just give a little assist where we can, just to get the information out and help that show.
Let me ask you a question. As you're involved in virtually every facet of city government, is there one issue, one question that seems to keep popping up, especially right now?
Yeah, I think, Bart, the challenge of managing our growth is constant across our departments. It's constant across our activities and the focus, quite honestly, most recently of council retreat, which we held last Thursday and Friday with our council and senior staff, and managing the impacts of that growth, providing infrastructure and facilities, staffing, and then also predicting expenses and revenues, how you pay for growth, how we balance our budget each year, how we make decisions on priorities for funding and for activity. Those are the sort of the constant themes that run through our day-to-day operations.
Okay, so you take regular opportunities to get together as a city council and work on issues. This is something that has not been done forever, just for the past couple of years, I guess.
Well, council retreats go back a few years. You know, as the complexity of city government and the complexity of the issues that our elected officials are facing grow, you know, it takes a lot more engagement to give them information and data. And that's really our staff's job is to provide information and data, and occasionally opinions on things to the mayor and council, and then we let them ask questions, analyze the issues, arrive at a direction, arrive at a vision, and then we execute. And so, as city government has gotten more complex, though, the role of our council workshops and our council retreats, and one-on-one interactions with individual members of our elected body, play an important role in giving them the information they need to make the decisions for our community.
Very good. We have a question here from a listener, and they're asking about the sunlighting of Town Creek. And they're saying it looks like all of the buildings are down except the liquor store. And they're wondering, is that going to be taken down or will it be used for some other purpose?
Yeah, glad to give you a great update on Town Creek. The project is out for bid now. We put the last building in the bid, and so the contractor who actually is awarded the project will be responsible for removal of that building. Our phases of work overlap there a little bit, and rather than us trying to rush to get that work completed and doing a separate bid for that demolition, we just pushed it into the scope of the next phase of work. And so our general contractor will be responsible for taking that down. We'll receive bids on that project in November. We'll take that to council in late November, early December for approval, award that contract. And our expectation is that the contractor be ready to go occupy the job in January and start some of that work. I think the nature of our site with so much paved surface that's in there, it's a great opportunity for them to maybe work there when weather conditions might not permit it on some other projects. This is going to be mostly removal of material. So we're excavating out about 10 feet to expose the stream that's actually underneath. And so it's really what we call in the industry a dirt job. It's got some utilities with it, but really the purpose of this is to expose that stream, put it back on grade, and so it'll be a good bit of excavation work that you'll see right out of the gate.
And so this will enable people to have another greenway, I guess, along the creek there, which will connect the greenway to the boardwalk system.
Yes, Bart, the project really started out as a failing, aging infrastructure project. And I know we've rehearsed, the history of Town Creek and how it was put in a culvert system in the early 50s and into the 60s. And as that culvert system aged, in 2007, for example, we experienced a very significant failure in that system under the drive-through of KFC. We had some other point repairs and point failures we've had to deal with in that time frame as well. And so as we move forward in reviewing how to manage the culvert system of Town Creek, our staff gathered together and we developed some cost projections of what it would take to upgrade the culvert system. And that's really a dig and replace application. And the numbers on that were very high. And so we knew there'd be an environmental benefit to exposing or daylighting Town Creek. And so we talked about the idea of do we just reestablish that stream system through our downtown, recreate, in this case it would be an urban stream section, use that opportunity to create some additional green space. And then from that concept, we grew into the Historic Bottoms planning study, which you were a big part of that, you and many other stakeholders. And the what I would call the topside improvements, what you'll actually see, you know, in and around Broad Street and Hickerson, will include some of the things that you discussed with a connection of the walking system or trail system through Town Creek, connecting Cannonsburg to Murphy Springs. It also gives us an opportunity to create some additional green space in our downtown. The Lytle Creek Greenway, Cannonsburg, great examples of that. As we look over at Murphy Springs and what we did there in partnership with the Discovery Center, a great green space, open space there. Daylighting Town Creek gives us another opportunity to do that. And as our residential population increases in downtown, those are going to tend to be smaller residential units, maybe multi-story. And so we see Town Creek as really their backyard. It's the place where folks will be able to go for a bike ride or a morning jog. That's a routine that many people have. Maybe go for a walk just in the morning with a cup of coffee. We also know that from some of our research that pets are a big part of people's lives today, and not that they haven't always been, but pets in an urban setting, especially dogs in an urban setting, you need some green space there for those pets. One project we checked with in Franklin, reported that 60% of their owners had dogs. And so that was a big part of their programming. And so I think it gives an opportunity for folks who are looking to move into that downtown, more urban setting. It gives them some green space that would not otherwise be available to them.
Now, one of the big conversations in that meeting, the public meeting, dealing with the Bottoms, the historic Bottoms, was to possibly put in some venues that would create musical attractions, have little shows along the way, some more restaurants in the area to attract people. I guess sort of like some of the things you see in Nashville. Are those still on the drawing board, or have they just sort of faded away?
No, they're still on the drawing board. I think the out of that Bottoms planning study, there were three big ideas that squarely fell into the city government's responsibility. One of those was daylighting Town Creek. One of those was a pedestrian bridge over Broad Street connecting the Bottoms to the downtown. And one of those was significant traffic improvements on Broad Street, Broad and Front and Vine, Broad and Church. Those all squarely fall into the responsibility of the local government authority. And so we've taken those on, and currently we're active in all three of those projects. We discussed Town Creek and where it's at. We are in the early stages of a concept design for a pedestrian bridge that would cross Broad Street, really at the intersection of South Church. And then we're active in reviewing plans and schedules for the improvements to Broad Street, which will really extend from Church Street through Front and Vine, including signalization of that intersection, realignment of that intersection to create that. Now, all that said, that's the city's, that's our playground. The other ideas that came out of that, there were 10. Seven of those really fall into the place of private development, private property, folks with a vision, folks with an entrepreneurial spirit, with ideas on how to implement that and manage those venues. And so we're going to try to provide the canvas for that, but we really need the private side to come along and take what we've done on Town Creek, what we envision with the Keystone Project, and then on the bottom side of that, find an opportunity to put in food services, entertainment venue, other activities, maybe smaller boutique hotels or some type of smaller housing units, and fill in the balance of that vision that was painted in the Historic Bottoms plan.
Now, for the entrepreneurs listening in, they may not have been at that meeting. Let's sort of enable them to vision that canvas that was painted that night, which was an amazing night. It was a packed house, and everybody, I've never seen anything like this. They were all thinking about the same thing. I mean, it was not this group wanting that and that group. After we got together and did some planning and a comparison of notes, everybody was thinking the same thing. I've never seen that before.
Sure, it's a great stakeholder involvement, and the ideas did coalesce around those 10 big ideas. And certainly arts and entertainment was a discussion on that. And then the additional venues, the additional sort of retail space that would be serving the population that's downtown. And so, Bart, as we look at our downtown today, it's very government services centered. 8 to 5, you have a very significant presence for county government, city government, our judicial system, and some of the industries that go with that. It's where you come to pay your taxes, pick up your license plates, obtain a building permit. If you have need to be in city court or county court, those locations are downtown. And so that's a very government-centric 8 to 5 activity. And we certainly have some other activities in our downtown with banks and other commercial and retail interest in jobs that are downtown, but a lot of it is driven by the location of the center of government for Rutherford County. To change that picture, we looked at what is the market downtown. And so we included an economist in our study. The economist said there is a great market for downtown living. And so when you bring additional residents downtown, all of a sudden that daytime active time goes from 8 to 5 to maybe 6 in the morning to 10 at night. When you overlay residents with the government services and retail and jobs that are already here, then we create a longer activation period, a higher population, active population, so more people will be in and around the downtown area and longer. And we also create that need for services and entertainment. And so those opportunities really will drive the business side of it, where an entrepreneur or business person would look at that and say, I've got a concept, I want to try it in the downtown, I'm going to put things in motion to do that. And so the city, you know, what we can do on the development side is manage the vision, we can manage the zoning and codes and building guidelines that come along with that, and drive those visions, drive those ideas into that vision to work with the private side to see those things happen. But really, that's going to follow the activation of the space, the rooftops. And so something like Project Keystone, where you increase your residential, daytime residential use, really will be key.
I know there's been conversation in the past about increasing the residential area in the spaces above the businesses that are on the square, because there are quite a few businesses who have upstairs, but for one reason or another, they were never finished. And those are old buildings. Is there still that opportunity? And I guess the other one, which was first to come along and say, we want to do it, was something called One East College LLC. But hard times, especially in the area of hotels, funding hotels, that hit that one, and still it hasn't come out of the ground yet.
So let's talk about the downtown. The city commissioned a study, really as a follow-up or an add-on study to the Bottoms and Highlands planning studies. There were a couple of studies that came out of that. One of them was the downtown parking study. We reviewed that, before looking at the parking inventory supply, projecting future needs, and making some recommendations on how to manage that sort of public and private parking. But a second study that grew out of that was a planning study that really looked at the square and a couple of blocks around the square. It's primarily of the older buildings that you talk about, that you mentioned, that date, some of those dating back into the 1800s, that currently exist on our square today, and how are they being used, and then how could they be used in the future? And so what we do see, what we did find out of that study, is there's a lot of underutilized or unutilized square footage in some of those buildings, especially those second floors and in some cases basements. And we've seen some pressure, development pressures on activating some of those spaces, but we've also looked at what are the hurdles. And so one of the big hurdles right now is fire protection. Those buildings are connected together, so you don't have separations between buildings. They have a common brick wall, most of them do, that was in the old style of construction, usually three layers of brick on each building, and those were interlocked and side by side. And so fire protection is a big deal, and fire protection for residential is really a big deal. And so to see some of those spaces converted to residential would really be driven by the ability to provide fire protection for those residential spaces. Now, that's a pretty high cost, Bart, for somebody to come in and get access to a sprinkler system and then sprinkle an older building like that. So one of the things we're looking at is how does the city help reduce that hurdle, that obstacle to utilization of those spaces.
Now, one of the areas that you mentioned, parking, one area that has sort of taken up the ball on parking are the old bank locations right there at the corner of East Main and Spring Street. And also, actually, there's two of the banks, both across from diagonally across from each other. The owner is trying to have paid parking in those areas. How is that working?
Well, I don't know how his business plan is working, but I think what we did see out of our downtown parking study is that paid parking is a likelihood in the future as the demand for parking grows and the supply can't grow or it can't grow as fast, then we will see some pressures on that downtown parking. It's one of the reasons we wanted to do the study, is to project where those needs are, how the city may play a role in that, how the county may play a role in providing, enhancing that public parking. But we do see a day when we think that there'd be a need to charge. Now, there's already private paid parking downtown. There's a couple of lots that are leased, if you will, that you can actually reserve your parking space through those private property owners. And then the two bank buildings you talked about, those are in different ownership now, and that owner has paid parking available. He has reserved parking available, but he has paid parking available that would operate more like sort of on-call parking. Hey, I need a parking space, so I'll park here. I'll pay to park. I'm just in the area for a couple hours, versus someone who may reserve a spot because they're here every day, a downtown business owner who might need several spots for their business. That's a different parking need than somebody who occasionally visits the downtown. And really, both of the needs need to be satisfied.
Now, with some of these new areas where the Methodist Church used to be, that project will eventually move forward with something. In fact, the city has moved in and said, we need the space. If they're not going to do it, we need it for city offices. Is that correct? Did you filed a letter with the developer?
We contacted the developer of One East College and started conversations about how that project, where it is, and how the city is interested in picking that property back up. So we started those conversations. It involves a lot of legal and financial issues to work through, but we're continuing to have those conversations with that group, and hopefully we'll get to a good resolution. The mayor and council asked at a previous council meeting that we look into that and pursue gaining that back, with the vision of using that space for government services, parking, and perhaps office space to help manage some of those needs in the downtown area.
So those are areas that are being worked on. There were also conversations, and in fact, I think he even submitted a bid for one of the banks to be redone into a whole different area where they had some living area as well as business areas. And that has that ever even gotten to the point of being considered by the chamber? Did he ever go that far in his plans on that?
Really, just a lot of conceptual work and market analysis. There's some wisdom in understanding if your plan will succeed financially before you move into it. I think there's some Bible that backs that up. But the owner of the bank properties is doing that due diligence now, trying to see what the costs are to convert those to different uses, and what the market is to support that. And certainly, we think there's an opportunity to repurpose those areas but managing that market and the financing part of it is going to be the magic that makes it work. And that's true for One East College. That was true for the two banks that we talked about. That's true for Project Keystone. At the end of the day, the dollars have to work. The market has to be there. We can't create a market out of thin air, but we can take advantage of the market is there. And I want to refer back to the economics market analysis that we did with the Bottoms at Highland, emphasizing that residential was a big need out of that market analysis.
Tell you what, let's pause for just a moment. When we come back, we will look closely at that Bottoms, the historic Bottoms, because there were, I believe, also conversations about building some multi-level residential along with retail and business areas. never have heard any more about that. We'll find out why. Stay with us.
The Wake Up Crew, weekday mornings, 6 to 7:50.
WGNS, your good neighbor station.
Rutherford County's place to talk.
This is Peter Demas, and our family is inviting your family to come eat with us at Demas's Restaurant. We started doing a limited time only menu, so once a month, we add new menu items to it for 1 month only. We're bringing back an old item that we used to have that we don't have anymore. So for example, we brought back clam sauce spaghetti this month. Last month we had Greek spaghetti. And again, that'll change. Now that you've heard about the changes that we're making at Demas's, you need to check it out. So come on over right now. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Hi, this is Amanda from Animal City. And our hand-fed baby bird nursery is starting to fill up. If you are looking for your next sweet feathered companion, come in and see us. Find your next pre-loved, pre-spoiled pet here at Animal City. Be sure to check out our downstairs level. Here at Animal City, we would like to thank Murfreesboro for letting us be your family-owned and operated pet store for 33 years. Animal City is located at 919 Northwest Broad Street.
Do you ever wonder why big financial institutions offer you hundreds of dollars to open an account? Have you ever looked through the pages of fine print to see the fees and conditions? You won't find complicated sales pitches at Heritage South Community Credit Union. We are different. We help when others won't. It's what our members tell us we do every day. If you're tired of the hassle, it's time to try a local community credit union. Visit heritagesouth.org to learn more or open an account today. Insured by NCUA.
Good morning. Still a bit of volume trying to get through Hermitage Donaldson right now on 40 westbound as you come past BNA Airport. Still moving at the moment on 24 westbound past Bell Road coming in from Murfreesboro, Rutherford County. However, there's been lots of radar in Rutherford County this morning. Some down in the Brentwood, Franklin area as well on 65. Be careful. Hey, Prince's Hot Chicken has new items on the menu. Check them all out today. They're delicious at princeshotchicken.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
We'll see sunny skies here this afternoon, a high in the low 80s. Tonight, partly cloudy, low of 67. Thursday, chance for showers late, cloudy, high of 80 degrees. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki on News Radio WGNS. Currently, it's 59.
Hey folks, it's Mike Sparks, 49th District House member. Running for re-election, would ask for your support.
The issues Mike's championed include the First and Second Amendment tax cut bills, passing legislation to improve mental health, the Safe Storage of Firearms Act, plus he sponsored affordable housing legislation that passed this year. Mike Sparks has been outspoken on Jefferson Pike for 20 years, which led to the $70 million widening project that's almost complete. We need Mike Sparks to remain in the State House.
This Mike Sparks asking for your vote.
Playful messages like Mike Sparks, Alicia Sparks Treasure.
WGNS is powered by Middle Tennessee Electric. MTE's EV Car Club has hundreds of members and growing. EV owners, enthusiasts, and anyone interested in learning more about electric vehicles is encouraged to sign up at mte.com/EV Car Club.
We're News Radio WGNS 100.5, 101.9, 1450. Online and on your phone at WGNSradio.com.
Happy birthday to Reginald Benford. Reginald Benford, our birthday winner today. Reginald gets the delicious banana pudding from Slick Pig Barbecue. Also, congratulations to Chad Sugg. Chad is our good neighbor of the day. The person who nominated Chad said he always gives wonderful advice to the customers and just a very caring person. Chad Sugg receives flowers from Jenny Harrison and the whole family over there at Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts, 117 South Academy Street. Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts, nice folks over there. If you're wanting to make somebody special, send them some gifts from Ryan Flowers Coffee and Gifts. By the way, happy anniversary to Jenny and her husband. They just celebrated a big one there. Sam Huddleston is our guest this morning. He is the assistant city manager here in Murfreesboro. And we were talking just as we left about some of the things that are happening about the growth in the, especially the downtown area. You're trying to create a different footstep for the downtown business area. The area that is the historic Bottoms was one of those areas that is very much a part of downtown. And there was talk about building some multi-level residential and business areas in the same building. Whatever happened to that? I'm not hearing any conversation at all on that.
Sure, Bart. What I will tell you that the boundary of the study for Historic Bottoms ran from Old Fort Parkway, really following the railroad track and Lytle Creek, crossing South Church, including the Murphy Springs area, some of the properties that front on Broad Street, and then it came back up and actually comes behind City Hall, including the WGNS property today, and then crossed back over following Broad Street back up to Old Fort Parkway. And that was the geographic boundaries of our study area for the Historic Bottoms. The Highland study was east of there, really extending from Broad Street, Memorial Boulevard, over to MTSU, and then southward to Main Street and even Martin Luther King. Those were the two boundaries of the study area. And so the Project Keystone is actually in the study area for the Bottoms. And Keystone includes the multi-level residential over office, residential over retail concept that you talked about. And then one phase of the Keystone project is actually in the Highlands study area, and that would be the parking lot that's immediately across Church Street from WGNS and as the plan has it today, the future home of your studios. So the Keystone project is the first one that we've looked at in the Bottoms that would include residential. We've had some inquiries on some of the other properties that were on the opposite side of Broad Street. I think they're waiting to see what happens with Keystone. I think, you know, it's unfortunate that One East College didn't get out of the ground, and we didn't see that concept advance. I think that would have been a good starter, but the Project Keystone, we're updating some provisions in our agreements and updating some information on that, and we're projecting to move forward with that after some amendments to the agreement and some work with the city and the IDB and the county. We project that'll be moving forward in the spring.
Now, is one of the issues with the Project Keystone the hotel that's proposed? Is it the financing of that hotel?
Well, it's financing a mixed use overall is a complicated thing. And so when you have a mixed use project and you have to borrow some money on that, the lenders want to be secured. And so there was some provisions in our agreement that kind of blended all that together, and they want to come back and apply specific funding and specific lending to specific elements of the project so the lenders have a way to secure their investment. And so in doing that, the hotel was identified as one of those things because it was tied in with all of the other elements, was going to be harder to finance and harder to encourage someone to participate in that. And so we decided, the city and the development team decided to pull that out. It's one of the amendments we have to make. To pull that out of a portion of the agreement, the hotel's still planned there. That's still the vision that both the city and the developer have, but it's going to be managed differently than the other elements of the project from a funding and from a construction standpoint.
The reason I brought that up is because that was perhaps one of the issues that has dramatically harmed the original One East College LLC project, the financing for the hotel. And then I think each of the other proposals that have been made, all three of them, have had hotels of some size in those projects. And so it's obviously had an impact. And the interesting thing is just about a month ago, Middle Tennessee State University says, we're going to do something to help our tourism students. We're going to build a hotel, and we're going to have it for them to learn how to operate. But they're wanting to build it over on campus. It looks like everybody could win if they would build it downtown.
Well, it's certainly, we think that the market is there for both some hospitality in and around campus. That's been a topic of discussion for 15, 20 years with the city and MTSU. Hotels downtown, you know, they were common, Bart, before the days of interstate and interstate interchange hotels. And so we believe that there's a downtown market. We also believe that there's a market in and around MTSU and their day-to-day business and visits to the campus and game days and other elements that they would have there. So we do believe there's a market. I will tell you from a lending standpoint, for residential and for hotel downtown, one of the challenges you have is proving to your lender that there is a market downtown that will support your business venture. And so that's one of the reasons that the city stepped in with TIF financing. We understand that the first project in may need a little assistance, may need to overcome some market hurdles to see those projects move forward. And that's certainly true in residential. We don't have a significant downtown residential condo market in the price point that our developers have looked at, and that's on multiple projects. We also don't have a downtown boutique hotel established market, and so it's hard for a lender to look at that and say, we know what people will pay for housing in condos downtown because there aren't currently any in the market. Or we know what somebody would pay for a room night for a boutique hotel in the downtown market because there currently aren't any. And so there's some more expectations on the lenders when you're going into that emerging market, and a downtown hotel would be an emerging market for us.
One thing that is very much in the news and an emerging market is getting more money to fund things. There's a special way to do that, and all it takes is you filling out a form. We'll be telling you about that in just a moment. It's called a special census. Why is that so important? We'll be back.
There are places where people talk, and then there are places that people talk about. News Radio WGNS is both on air, online, and on the phone.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. All those friends you've made while banking here over the years, well, they're still there. And so are the delicious, warm, homemade cookies.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Everything you enjoyed at Capstar, still there at Old National Bank. Old National Bank, ready to serve you.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Alan Butcher was one of many local residents who only went to Adams Place.
Of course, Adams Place, in my mind, is the premier senior care facility, not only in Murfreesboro, but in the immediate area. We're very happy here and so glad we came.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adams Place. Call me for more information about Adams Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
Adams Place on Memorial, across from Walmart.
Talk with the police chief, the mayor, and other local leaders about issues that concern you.
The Action Line with Bart Walker, weekdays at 8:10 on WGNS.
Welcome back. Assistant City Manager Sam Huddleston is with us, and we're talking now about the special census. It seems like we talk about the special census quite a bit, that one. You finish one, and then it's time to start another. Why is a special census so important?
Well, Bart, the state of Tennessee shares revenue with cities and counties based on population. And in their wisdom, the state determined that they needed certified, reliable population estimates. And so they use the federal census that we do every 10 years to set that number. In communities that have a significant change in population, fast growing or annex residents into their community, the state of Tennessee has given us the opportunity to conduct up to four special censuses in that 10-year period in between the federal updates. And so for fast growing communities, the state will revise their shared revenues based on that updated population. We receive $175 per year per person on our certified population. The last population that we had, last certified number, is 152,769 people. So since the 2020 census, we've been paid in state shared revenues by the Tennessee by the state of Tennessee based on that number. Quick math, that's about $27 million per year. We know from our data that we've added, in that same time frame, we've added over 7,600 new residential units. So just by people occupying those new residential units alone, that's 15,000-17,000 new residents that have moved into Murfreesboro. We also know that from the 2017 special census and the 2020 federal census that there were significant parts of our community that were undercounted. No responses or limited responses from certain parts of our community. And so based on those things, plus net migration and net births over deaths, those are all estimates we can get from the state of Tennessee for Rutherford County and Murfreesboro. We believe we're comfortably able to add 20,000 to that certified population. And that gets us an additional $3.75 million per year, and that's every year. It's about a 15% increase in that state shared revenue, and it would help with our funding needs on roads and bridges and school and public safety, parks, fire, police, all of the things that are necessary services coming from the city of Murfreesboro.
What would you estimate that the population of Murfreesboro is based on this material?
Yeah, I think we're comfortably at 180,000 just based on the 152 plus what I see in the data. I think it'll be hard for us to count that many, but we're gonna give it an effort. And I think I shared with you, I did just share with you our current dashboard. We have 890 responses. That's totaling about 2,400 individuals. So that number really needs to get up closer to 60,000 responses. We estimate that we have 74,000 residential addresses in the city of Murfreesboro. And doing the math on that, we know that on the average, we have about 2.3 individuals per household. And so when you work that math out, we're comfortably in the 160,000, 170,000 range just based on that information alone. And so what I would encourage our residents to do, if you live in the city of Murfreesboro, go to murfreesborocensus.com. It takes you about 2 minutes. It'll ask you for your street address. It'll ask you for how many people live in your home. And then it'll ask you for the first and last name of each individual that lives in that home. There's one follow-up question that they will ask you on how did you learn about the census. Answer that question, click submit, and your information will be automatically updated into our database.
Be sure and put radio.
Be sure and put radio. If you're listening this morning, click WGNS. Click that you heard it through WGNS. But that's the easiest way to do it. Now, we're doing some other outreaches. We're having people available at some of the public events. We were at some of the activities on the square this weekend. We were on the MTSU campus a few days ago. We'll be back on campus. We'll be working with some of our community partners, civic organizations, churches, other stakeholder groups. We'll be sending out mailers. BARDA, with 74,000 individual residential addresses and about $2 per mailer, one mailing cost us about, just for the mail materials, cost us $150,000.
Now, what is causing some people to not want to fill this out, to remain anonymous? How can we make them feel comfortable and you know, sort of calm their fears?
Well, I think most civically minded people are comfortable in filling it out. I think part of our challenge for those folks is just letting them know. And so you'll see ads running. You'll see things on social media. WGNS will be a partner with us in that. We'll have out yard signs. We'll be present at events. If you interact with a city employee, we've asked our city employees to be ambassadors for us and reach out to the citizens that interact with them on a daily basis, building permit, stopping by to pay your taxes, other interactions, visiting a park site. We're asking our staff to do that. But I also think that there's a segment of our population who maybe don't understand the significance of having an updated population for the city. Maybe they don't understand the importance of a special census. And so there's also an educational element for that. And I do know that some of our interactions with some younger people, when we ask them to fill out the census, oh, no, I'm okay. I don't need to do that. But we do need them to do that. And so part of our challenge is going to be reaching out into those demographics and convincing them of the importance to the city to take about 2 minutes to fill that out. Social media will be a big part of that. A lot of people get their news and get their information from their electronic devices. And so you'll be seeing some action, some efforts from the city in that area, including maybe some educational information that'll target specifically maybe our college and 20s and folks in their 30s, just to let them know what the special census does for the city of Murfreesboro.
So fill that out. And again, what is the web address people go to?
MurfreesboroCensus.com. And Bart, we will only use the information submitted for the purpose of the special census. We won't share that with any other agencies. We won't share that with marketing folks. We won't put you on a mailing list or anything like that. We're limited to only use this by the state rules, to only use the data we collect for this purpose, the special census only. And so your information will be secure, it'll be safe. We won't be sharing that with other groups and sharing your private information with other individuals.
MurfreesboroCensus.com.
That's correct.
Okay, one thing, we're almost out of time, but it's about time to pay those city taxes, isn't it?
It is. City taxes are due and payable December 31st of this year. I can tell you, I sat just across the hall from where those citizens come in, and we've had a good stream of folks coming in daily. For those that want to pay in person, you can do that at City Hall, first floor City Hall, our tax and finance customer service counter.
And there's often a good art show up there to enjoy.
We do have art in the rotunda. There's some displays up right now from some of our elementary students from Murfreesboro City Schools. And so you have an opportunity to see some of the art. We also have our STARS employees for the past 12 months there. So you can see some of our outstanding City of Murfreesboro employees that we've recognized through the STARS program.
And we are very fortunate to have those folks with us. Assistant City Manager Sam Huddleston, our guest this morning. Sam, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Bart.
Stay with us. Much more to come right here on your Good Neighbor Station. Stay with us.